Whether it be for work or pleasure, one way to get around is via a boat or a ship. Watching the endless blue and feeling the boat slightly bob with the water beneath you is calming and serene, until it all goes wrong. There have been instances in which people on these boats vanished, seemingly into thin air, and a fair few were found off our own shores. One case even has the whole boat disappearing and perhaps reappearing. To this day, the fate of the people on board remain unknown. This yarn will explore four such cases of abandoned ghost boats and ships.
Hello there and welcome. I'm your host Elle, and you're listening to one of many bizarre yarns.
Kaz 2. On Sunday, April 15th, 2007, three mates went out on a catamaran for an adventure of a lifetime. The party consisted of brothers Peter Tunstead, aged 63, and James Tunstead, aged 69, and Des Batten, aged 56, the owner and skipper of the ill-fated boat named the Kaz 2. They planned an 8-week voyage starting from Airlie Beach to Townsville, and then sailing all the way to Perth. The departure date had already been postponed due to bad weather, and the men were eager to embark on the trip. It was now or never. Although the men knew the ins and outs of sailing, they weren't exactly experienced with journeys of this extent, and they were having a bit of an issue understanding the Kaz 2's GPS system. The previous owner of the boat, Graham Douglas, had warned the trio about the trip, advising them that they probably shouldn't start the trip until they are ready and confident enough to do so. However, the men relented and set sail on that fateful Sunday afternoon. About an hour or so later after their departure, the crew was contacted by one of the wives, but that was the last time anyone had heard from them. 3 days later, on Wednesday 18th, the catamaran was spotted from a helicopter drifting aimlessly off the Great Barrier Reef, and a couple of days later from the initial sighting of the boat, authorities came to investigate. When winched down into the boat, investigators were greeted by an eerie scene. There was no sign of struggle or danger on the boat. Everything appeared to be normal and frozen in time, save for the fact that the people who were on the boat were missing. The engine was still running. There was a half full cup of coffee. A laptop was set up and on, and food and cutlery were laid out on the table as if the trio were about to have a meal. The mainsail was found to be shredded up. The sea and air search for the crew started immediately, with the Coast Guard and volunteers vigorously scouring the area for any sign of the men. Unfortunately though, nothing turned up, and the search was called off several days after it began. Police examinations found that there was no evidence of foul play involved in the disappearance of the three men. It was concluded that all three men have gone overboard after a rescue gone awry. However, there were other speculations about the disappearance of the men. Some suspected that they had set up the disappearance for insurance purposes, whereas others thought that the men had been attacked or taken by dodgy people on another boat. One thing that makes no sense is the state of the sail. How could it have been shredded up? To this day, nobody could give a definite answer to that. Nonetheless, the disappearance of Peter, James, and Des is a tragedy, and my heart goes out to their families. Hopefully one day they get the full closure they deserve. Jian Seng. So a lot of shady and illegal things happen right off our shores. Hence our strict border patrol working hard to make sure that we nip these things at the bud. In 2006, a Coastwatch plane was flying over the Gulf of Carpentaria when they spotted a large tanker that looked out of place and somewhat neglected, and it had a broken tow rope attached to it. Of course, it was a rather concerning sight to see, and they decided to investigate. Customs officers boarded the tanker, but they were greeted by nobody. The boat had Jian Seng printed on the side of it, but that's about all they know about this strange boat. Although it had an Asian-sounding name, they couldn't pinpoint the exact origin of this boat. There was no sign of recent human activity, no IDs or other documents, no belongings left behind, nada. The only thing customs found was a copious amount of rice, which they may have been transporting. Most likely, the crew may have come aboard the towing boat that was helping the Jian Seng, but as soon as the rope broke off, the crew probably decided to abandon the boat rather than rescue it. Perhaps it was too dangerous of a task, or maybe it was a lost cause. Since the tanker looked to be in a rather decrepit state, it was probably on its way to a scrapyard. Or maybe there was a darker reason for abandoning the ship. We can only speculate, as there was no definite answer as to who owned Jian Seng, who was on it, and where it was going. It's likely we'll never know, as the tanker had been taken out and sunk. Although there's nothing inherently spine-tingling about the Jian Seng, I can't help but think about seeing this old, rusty, abandoned ship would actually be kind of creepy though. Imagine it coming through a wall of fog or something. Additionally, there's also the media sensationalizing the Jian Seng as a ghost ship, this podcast included. High Aim 6. On January 4th, 2003, an abandoned boat was found drifting on the waters near Broome. The propellers were still going, but there was no sign of life to be seen. The Navy had been alerted, and they sent out some personnel to investigate. Upon boarding, they saw it clear from the get-go that High Aim 6 had been vacated by its crew. The life jackets were gone and the rafts had been deployed. High Aim 6 was a fishing vessel, and the catch they made had rotted and filled the boat with an awful stench. The fish would have been there for at least 2 weeks, and had gone rotten because the freezer failed. The crew had left behind their toothbrushes and a heap of canned food. The boat was then towed to Broome and moored where a thorough investigation could be conducted. The High Aim 6 left Taiwanese waters on the 30th of October 2002 and flew an Indonesian flag, since the majority of the crew were Indonesian. The last time the owners of High Aim 6 heard from the captain, Chen Tai Chen, was on December 13th of that year. He had let them know that they were near the Marshall Islands. Then, no contact. Since they had no contact from the vessel for 2 weeks now, the owners reported the boat missing. It was speculated that the boat had been attacked and hijacked by pirates. Others believed that a mutiny happened, and the crew likely dispatched the ones in charge before abandoning the boat. However, authorities had managed to track down one of the crew members of High Aim 6 back in Indonesia. He confessed that Captain Chen and the chief engineer, Lee R. Dewey, had been killed, and the remaining crew went back to Indonesia. However, he didn't divulge who was responsible for the killings of the captain and chief engineer, and why they were murdered, and how on earth they made it back to Indonesia safely. If that's anything to go by, the mutiny theory seems to make a lot more sense. This is my personal layman's opinion, but I think the crew may have killed Captain Chen and Engineer Lee, unfortunately. Likely thrown them overboard, got on the rafts and drifted about until another boat found them and rescued them, probably telling them that they were attacked or there was something wrong with the vessel they were on. Again, just reiterating that this is just my guess, but we'll probably never truly know what happened. Paternella. Last but not least, we have the luxury schooner named the Paternella. Her voyage began on the 16th of October 1988, and on board were Alan Nicol, a successful businessman and owner of the boat, skipper Ken Jones along with his wife Noreen and daughter Ronalee, and two young deckhands, John Blissett and Michael Calvin. The Paternella had planned to set out from Fremantle, Western Australia, all the way out to Airlie Beach, Queensland. The boat was equipped with lifeboats, radar and satellite navigation, watertight compartments, and an electric radio beacon that would show the boat's position for at least 48 hours if anything were to go wrong. It was a rather strong boat built to last. It was made in Tasmania during the 1950s. And was used for expeditions to Antarctica and as a crayfish catching vessel that withstood the harshest of sea conditions. Eventually, when it was bought by Alan Nicol, he planned to use it as a luxury charter boat out in sunny Queensland. Initially, the journey was going well. Everyone was having a great time. John Blissett even sent out a message in a bottle inviting whoever found it to come join them on their idyllic travels. This haunting message was later found in 2007. Though later, Nicol had to cut his journey short when he was summoned back to Perth for business matters. He got off at Esperance and figured that the rest of the crew would have a merry time without him. The next person to depart the Paternella was Ronalee, who had been requested to go back to work. She left them at South Australia. So now it was down to four: Ken, Noreen, John and Michael. On the 8th of November at 12:55 a.m, Ken radioed in to the Overseas Telecommunication Commission that he believed that the Paternella was running out of fuel and that they were tacking, zigzagging against the wind essentially, and that they were probably needing assistance in the morning to get into Sydney Harbour. The operator, Keith McLennan, didn't think much of it, and as it was normal for boats to run out of fuel, and the skipper he was talking to sounded calm and collected. However, about an hour or so later, Ken radioed in again, this time asking for a weather report and directions to get to Moria, a coastal town 5 hours south of Sydney, the opposite way he was supposed to be going. It was strange, considering that the boat was supposed to be running out of fuel, to want to travel that far. Then a final call came in after two, but it was very staticky and Keith could just make out, quote, 300 kilometres south, is it? South. Unquote. The Paternella never did end up going into the Sydney Harbour. But nobody thought much of it because it's not unusual for skippers to change their minds and continue forth rather than dock into the harbour. But Ken's son, Peter, was growing concerned. He could no longer contact the Paternella via the ship-to-shore radio, and when the day of the expected arrival at Airlie Beach came, the 18th of November, the luxury boat never showed. So a huge sea and air search was launched, but there was no sight of it anywhere. It was learned later that a few days before the schooner had vanished, Michael Calvin attempted to contact his family. When his father picked up the phone, Michael managed to get in a "G'day, Dad," before the communication was cut off. Friends, family, and the public suspected that something sinister happened to the crew and the boat. Some people speculated that the boat met a grisly end when it collided with a larger vessel or even a Russian submarine. The Cold War was happening at this time. Others reckoned that the Paternella had been hijacked by criminals and maybe even stolen by them, with the original crew being their prisoners or worse. Peter Jones believed that there was something very fishy going on. For starters, he believed that his father, a very experienced skipper, would not use words of uncertainty when talking about issues, for instance, saying he believed they were out of fuel rather than saying they were out of fuel. It was later learned that skipper Ken Jones was likely not in a good place during the journey. While on the Paternella, he had found out that the boat he owned, the Fremantle Doctor, was repossessed, and that his business had not been doing too well. Money may have been something that kept him under pressure and could have caused him to snap, but we truly don't know what he was feeling and can't exactly accuse him of anything. Despite this, the people on board had no criminal or dodgy history. It was speculated that the young deckhands had hijacked the boat to take for themselves, but their families vehemently denied this, saying that this was out of character for them. On May 1989, a professional fisherman discovered a lifebuoy covered in barnacles at Terrigal, and upon removing them, saw that it was marked Paternella Fremantle. Forensic testing showed that if this buoy belonged to the boat, then the Paternella would have still been afloat at least 6 months after the last radio call. A coronial inquest concluded that the boat had likely sunk with no survivors. It was assumed that it was likely a large ship that would have hit and destroyed the schooner if it did happen. However, the large vessel that was within the Paternella's vicinity at the time claimed that they never saw a boat matching the Paternella's description, nor did they hit anything or showed signs of that. Any debris would have washed away into oblivion by then. But here's where things get a little weird. Over time since the Paternella's disappearance, there have been numerous sightings of the recognisable schooner sailing on the seas in Australia, Southeast Asia, and even as far as South America, but they weren't easily proven. Apparently, when someone radioed the yacht that they thought was a Paternella, the people replied that no, their boat was not named that, but then sailed off the next day, never to be seen again. Another weirdly coincidental thing that people have pointed out is that Michael Calvin had worked on the set of a movie called Dead Calm, about a yacht that gets hijacked by a psychotic murderer. Parts of the movie were filmed in Airlie Beach, the very destination that the Paternella failed to arrive at. Lastly, there's something ominous about the boat's name itself. The very first owner of the yacht had named it the Paternella, as he heard that it was a name of a god who protected the Aboriginal tribe and thought that it'd be a good name for the boat. However, they have been misguided. In the government document about the language of Tasmanian Aboriginal tribes, they listed the word Paternella and its meaning being devil. Okay, so that was 4 cases of maritime mysteries. Hopefully you enjoyed them, and like always, if you have anything more to contribute, feel free to reach out. Your 2 cents is always accepted. I know I've lost consistency recently, but that's because I no longer have as much free time as I did when I first started the podcast, and at the time I was a casual worker with only 2 or 3 shifts a week, and plenty of time to do research and back-to-back recordings. Now, I'm pretty much a full-time worker, and it's getting challenging for me to get as much done for the podcast as I used to. That doesn't mean I'm giving up, though. If the episodes come late, then that's better than nothing, at least to me anyway. And also, if you haven't noticed already, I'm kind of sick, so forgive me if I sound kind of crap right now. If you're enjoying what you're listening to, come on and give us a generous rating. A higher rating would likely entice potential listeners to join our bizarreness. Share the podcast around to your family, friends, co-workers, and the bored worker at the desk of a Travelex. Anyway, the world gets crazier and crazier by the minute, and I hope yous all stay safe and vigilant. You never really know what can happen. Until next time, be kind to others and be safe. See ya.
Thank you for tuning in to Bizarre Yarns. This episode was researched, written, and edited by El Host. Now, we're all here to have a good time. We all have different backgrounds, ideas, and opinions, and I would like to ask you to please be respectful and mindful of other listeners and followers. If you have any questions or just want to give your two cents, contact me via email or Instagram, Twitter, all of which are in the show notes. Again, I'm grateful for you listening, and I look forward to the next yarn. Thank you.